It's Monday, March 19th, 2012. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Chicago, Illinois. Well, good evening and welcome to a podcast from a rather crazy couple of weeks. I have been on the road a bit, and that is actually good news when you are an independent digital consultant, as I've been for a little over 3 years, but it's definitely been a busy time. I am on my last leg of a flight back to Oklahoma City, actually from Washington, D.C., and I had a great day today and evening yesterday at the Discovery Communications headquarters for the Beyond the Textbook Forum, which was a discussion with a bunch of other wonderful educators talking about the future of really textbooks, but not just textbooks. I think the platform and the ways in which we can interact around content. So I'm going to, though, go back to this past Friday on March 16th, 2012 in Yarmouth, Maine. I had an opportunity to share a keynote for a great day of professional development in Yarmouth, and I'm going to direct your attention to the podcast show notes to not only check out the 90-second video created by the superintendent of schools in Yarmouth on Thursday with some students, which was a pretty amazing introduction, but also to the curriculum for the day, which is on a Google site, and this was, with the exception of my presentations, an entirely Yarmouth teacher-led day of professional development. So it really was wonderful, and I think it was a great example for other schools who are, you know, seeking to differentiate professional development as we should for educators. So the keynote that I'll be sharing now was focused on the question, why play with media? And this was my really first opportunity, I guess, to give a full keynote on only the why part of playing with media. Usually I'm focused on talking a lot about the how part of playing with media, but this was the why. And so there were 10 different reasons for playing with media, and I hope you find this information inspirational and hope you'll pass it along to others. You can always find out more about playing with media, simple ideas for powerful sharing, by visiting the website playingwithmedia.com. Also, don't forget to check out examples of student work at share.playingwithmedia.com. And as of about 2 weeks ago, I've also created an ebook sandbox, so a place to share ebooks and download free ebooks that folks are creating. Some of those are student created, some are teacher created, and that website is ebooks.playingwithmedia.com. So many, many thanks to especially Alice Barr for the opportunity to come up to Yarmouth and share this presentation. Also, a shout out to my friend Bob Sprankle, who I was able to hang out with a little bit at the end of this trip, and it's just a very big honor and opportunity to have a chance to learn with great teachers and leaders in the state of Maine. So without further ado, we're turning back the clock a few days to March 16th, 2012 in Yarmouth, Maine. Quite an introduction.
What a fantastic way to start a discussion about playing with media. Modeling. Anyone here have Pioneer Spirit? Do you remember Far and Away, the movie? So I hail from Oklahoma now. My family and I moved there about 6 years ago. I'm a child of the Chisholm Trail, as much as a Air Force brat can be, living in five states before sixth grade. I lived in Kansas and Texas and now Oklahoma. And one of the things we do in Oklahoma in third grade is the land run. We reenact the run that happened in the early part of the century, of the 20th century, when we had unclaimed lands and, you know, the shotgun was fired and off they raced with their horses and wagons, you know, to stake a claim. And I know Mainers have folks who are from away and folks who are Mainers, right? Do you have any Mainers here? So in Oklahoma, if you can trace your roots to the run, you know, and that's your state, because we're a state of immigrants. And this is my middle daughter, Sarah. She's now in sixth grade, and when she was in third grade, they form family groups, and they have their wagons, and they, you know, dress up and have this whole thing. And I think about the pioneer spirit. Would I have had what it takes to, you know, leave from the potato famine and cross the Atlantic and come to the colonies? To go to St. Joe, Missouri, where many of the wagon trains left west, and think about the risk. Think about what you were going to subject your family to if you were going to head out into this unknown territory where there were so many hazards, but so many possibilities, especially when land was such a big deal, you know, to have your own land, your own property. Well, this past September, I had a chance actually to join Mike and Alice and others in Lewiston, Maine, for a two-day workshop called the Google Geo Teachers Institute. And Toby Lester, who wrote this book, was one of our speakers. And this is one of the best books I've ever read. I studied geography in college and love geography. And this book is the story of America's birth certificate. The most expensive item ever purchased by the Library of Congress. How many of you know about this? The Walsamuir map. Okay. Read this book. Get this book. Read it. It is an incredible connection story of not just geography and maps, but the way in which we view the world. This map in 1507 was created in 1507, and it was discovered, I should know the exact year, but in the last 200 years, in a castle somewhere in Europe where it had been sequestered away. And it was the first map to have the word America on the northern on the continent of North America. The first map to show waters surrounding all of North America. And this was before we had supposedly the discovery by Westerners of the Pacific Ocean, in Panama. And so they say this is why we're called America and not Columbus Land or whatever we would be called, you know, we were named for Columbus. Maps are important because they help us understand the world that we live in, and they help us think about where we're going. It's very interesting in this book to hear about how the stories of Marco Polo, you know, shaped this part of the map and how it was drawn. Detail here, all kinds of detail about these ports in Africa because, you know, relatively speaking, a lot of explorers had been down this part of Africa, and they had, I think it was Da Gama who circumnavigated Africa as a Westerner first, or at least who came back and told about it and claimed credit for that. So I think today we're digital learning pioneers, and you here in Yarmouth are absolutely at the cutting edge of this exploration, this discovery, and this map making, because uncharted territory is totally where we are today. Even with this professional development, I'm not aware of another school, and maybe there are, but the model you all are doing here of an in-house presentation, is anybody being stretched today? You know, we are, right? Because we're being asked to participate and we're being asked to teach and share. And you have so much to share with people who are here today, with your peers. So a lot is happening on the internet. This is totally antiquated. It's from April of last year. This is a Gizmodo article. In 60 seconds, all these things. 600 new videos on YouTube. By a show of hands, who tried to put or did put video online before 2006 when YouTube was invented? Did anybody try this? I know Mike did. It took a lot of clicks. It took purchasing equipment like servers. Today, to be able to take a phone, record a video, and be able to put it online for free for a global audience, and be able to do that with an unlimited quantity, unless we have a special account after 15 minutes, that is absolutely unbelievable. And one of the things that a lot of people are talking about more and more is Khan Academy. Who saw 60 Minutes last week? Not going to show the whole thing, just the intro, but here is the intro to that piece.
Take a moment and remember your favorite teacher. Now imagine that teacher could reach not 30 kids in a classroom, but millions of students all over the world. That's exactly what Sal Khan is doing on his website, Khan Academy. With digital lessons and simple exercises, he's determined to transform how we learn at every level. One of his most famous pupils, Bill Gates, says Khan, this teacher to the world, is giving us all a glimpse of the future of education.
Okay, so Khan Academy is exciting, but delivering and serving lessons does not equal teaching and learning. And I find it very interesting that at the top of the Khan website it says 130,370,010, as of yesterday, lessons served. And we've got other folks who talk about how many they have served. I noticed that the marquee when I came here, it didn't say, Yarmouth High School, 4,000 lessons served. Because we know education is far more than simply delivering it. It's, you know, it's not a banking model. There are folks, Dewey and Paolo Freire and others who talk about, you know, real education. I love the quote about education is lighting a fire, not filling a pail. However, there's a lot of value and benefit to having this kind of access. Has anyone had their child or a student in their class impacted by Khan Academy yet? All right. Here's a video I just saw this morning that Joyce Valenza, a librarian in New Jersey, tweeted out. Just a short little video.
Khan Academy has helped me, but can it help you? Go to YouTube. Khan Academy. So, Khan Academy on YouTube. Khan Academy, how has it helped me? Well, Khan Academy basically helped me with math. If I had something, a problem that I didn't remember what teacher told us, or there was a quick way to find it, I go into YouTube, go to Khan Academy, and I just either search through the videos or just go to the specific subject like algebra or geometry or whatever's going on. I had pre-calc at the time. And I just look at his videos, and I look at it over and over until I fully understood it, and then I could do it. I ended up passing a whole bunch of tests from his videos. He also did do videos about the economy and the situation. I saw one time he did something with CNN. Was it? I'm pretty sure it was CNN, and it had something to do with the economy. Now, I didn't fully understand it because I'm not, you know, really an economist. I don't really know all that, but, you know, basically the stuff that he did say made sense. Not everything, I didn't understand everything he said, but it was pretty much good enough for me. It has helped me. And I thank you for that, Khan Academy. Thank you. I appreciate that. Joshua Warner, I'm out.
Nicholas Negroponte wrote a great book and published in 1995 called Being Digital. And in that book, he talks about how incredible it is to think when we make ideas, when we convert them from paper or atoms into bits, ones and zeros, what happens to our communication cost? Basically goes to zero. The opportunity cost, the amount that we need to share one more copy, it's zero. This is a revolutionary idea. And today, with YouTube and other technologies, and broadband access, how many of us have broadband access at home? Okay? And so I'm sure more of your students, not everybody, not everyone has technology. I mean, especially in Oklahoma, I'm here saying, you know, we don't have that many schools that are doing, you know, what laptop initiatives. And broadband is still, in rural areas, much harder to come by. But this is a huge thing, especially as we have digital access. Another book I'll commend to you is Clay Shirky's book, Here Comes Everybody. And he talks about how much we're struggling with this one-to-many sharing. I don't know about you, but I'm really pleased that when I was an adolescent, friends did not have a device in their pocket which could record not only photos, but audio and even video, and put it into global distribution and potentially archive it forever for the world to see. So, like it or not, we live in that world. And while there is a dark side to that world, there are also incredible bright sides to the world. I know Amy has done study with her students about Arab Spring and talking about the incredible events in the Middle East that are ongoing, you know, and I've wondered about Syria and just, you know, it brings up all these issues. I know you all talked about Darfur and when do we intervene and you know, national interest and human rights and so many things. Incredible ability that we have to share to an undefined number of people. So today, we'll talk about playing with media. And I'm going to make the case, hopefully today, that we need to play with media as digital pioneers. We need to play with text, images, audio, video, sometimes it's a mix. We're going to be in the circus tent together. And sometimes we might feel a little goofy, you know? Sometimes we're going to mess up. But we're going to hopefully be in a culture and a community. And I think that's one of the strongest things you all have here is your culture of learning, which is going to be supportive of that. Because we all grew up in the 20th century. And we were schooled in the 20th century, where books that were printed, they were like on paper, you know? And we couldn't get a new one every day because they were expensive. That world, we wrote essays more than we created something else because those are the tools that we had. So today I'm going to share 10 different reasons why I think we should play with media. And we'll look at some videos and I'll give you a chance to visit with each other. And I hope to encourage you to stretch beyond your comfort zone using these tools. And let's start with creativity. Turn to your neighbor and share with them a work skill or life skill that may not be on a standardized test, but is really important for your students and for your own children. And let's just say by 18 or by high school graduation, you really hope your own children, your own students have that skill. Okay? You have 30 seconds. Go.
Really look at what's around you, pay attention.
Okay, very good. Somebody else? The people in the back thought they were safe.
My neighbor said prioritize.
Okay, and elaborate. What is that? Why is that important?
That they can be so overwhelmed with all the things that they can do that they really have to decide what's a smart way to use their time.
How easy is it to be distracted today? Easier than ever. Didn't you all have a snow day here recently?
Yeah.
You know? Wow, what can kids do on a snow day today if, you know, they or their friends have an Xbox or a Wii or they've got a smartphone? Or, I mean, unbelievable, right? There are important work skills and life skills that aren't measured on the assessment. And on that list of being good observers, of good listeners, good prioritizers, I think is creativity. And you said it, I didn't even prompt you, creative problem solving. How much do you value having students in your class that can help you problem solve stuff that comes up? Does stuff come up in your classroom? Stuff that you might not have anticipated? Stuff that didn't happen when you had a little class maybe on that idea? Or, you know, stuff comes up. And so creative problem solving is essential. So creativity is instrumentally valuable, but it is also intrinsically valuable. What's the play that you all are about to do? We're not seeing the sets, they've been moved behind the curtain, but what's the play that's coming up? Would you agree that your culture as a community and a school is elevated by the fact that you have theater? By the fact that your students have opportunities? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things that come up with theater. not always culturally elevated. There's a lot of skills, though, that kids have, and there's a lot of value in kids finding their tribe and sharing their passion and being able to have that as an outlet and an opportunity. So in 2010, in November, Oklahoma City hosted the Creativity World Forum. Wow, Oklahoma is the only state currently still, I think, to be a part of this organization, which is emphasizing creativity not only in the arts and culture, but in business and commerce and in education as well. And so as part of that, they had a video contest, and I asked my children to talk about creativity a little bit. And this is actually a video. Has anybody seen this in the book? Have you played it? And if you play it on the iPad, you can play it in there. You can click and watch. So this is Rachel, as a first grader, talking about creativity.
Hi, I'm Rachel, and I'd like to talk to you about art. Art is one of the things that I like to do, being creativity and using your brain and sharing. See, at my school, only fifth graders have art teachers and get to do art and get the experience. Well, I feel that first graders should be allowed, because art is one of the things that I like to do. Here's one of the drawings that I did when I was young, and even I still like to do it. Even when I was six, I liked to do it. And in all ages, it is all still the same. I think that using your brain and creativity is a good thing, that first graders should be allowed to do art, because it's a feeling that you can do it, and using your brain and just doing what you're told to do inside. So I think you should go on and keep moving and keep trying and getting it right.
So Rachel was an illustrator for my book, and she drew six different pictures on an iPad app called Brushes, and I had her make a little invoice for me, and she charged me $20 a picture for unlimited rights for global distribution of these images, and she started her savings account with it. And the other day we were making an e-book, which is another good story, and she said, "Dad, do you think this means I'll get to travel with you more?" And I said, "I bet there's teachers that will want to hear you, show them about making e-books and recording their voice." Creativity is intrinsically valuable, but it's also important to the economy. And so Richard Florida is the author of several books about this, and The Rise of the Creative Class is one. And I'm going to show you a slide after this that explains these lines. Basically, we have on the x-axis our years from 1800 to 2009, and then we have the percentage of the workforce represented by the y-axis. In green, we see agricultural jobs. In purple, we see the rise of the creative class. In blue, we see the manufacturing class. Service economies in red. These are definitions of those different job categories that Florida documents. Having heard Angus King speak on a couple occasions, and having heard a podcast of him talking, and that's where I probably first heard about the book, The World is Flat, I know that folks in Maine are attuned very clearly to this idea that the world is shifting, the skills we need to help students develop are not the same as they were, decades ago, and what we're doing in education, it needs to change, because the world has changed. A quick little story, growing up in Kansas and thinking about farming and how does this happen? We used to have these little signs, and I think they are still out there, about one Kansas farmer feeds blank people plus you, And I remember when that was, in the 40s and 51, and now I think it's way over 100. How does that happen? Well, I mean, technology, biotechnology. I have a friend who worked for Monsanto Seed Company, interestingly enough, trying to locate farmers who had cataloged other farmers who were catching their seed to raise cotton, because it's illegal to do that when you have hybrid seeds that have been patented. And he described how the combines and the tractors that plant are all GPS connected, and they know exactly what the yield was on this specific part of the land, because that's how much, determines how much fertilizer. It's incredible. It's incredible. But guess what? We don't need as many farmers today. And manufacturing and outsourcing and all these things are happening. So, bottom line, creativity matters. It matters to the economy. It matters intrinsically for our cultural identities, and it matters for engagement. This is a LED light picture. Have you ever made one of these before? Get a digital camera that has a bulb setting, or it'll have a shutter open for like 15 seconds, and then you get an LED. You can do it with a regular flashlight, but we make LED light pens for like $3. So you put it on a tripod, and that's my son with a Darth Vader mask on holding his lightsaber. And we have two different pens, and so, you know, he's using force lightning and doing the lightsaber. We learn through play. Turn to your neighbor and briefly describe to them how you learn new skills best. Think of a skill that you've recently learned how to do, and how did you get to own that? How did you really get to know that skill? Go, you have 30 seconds. Say it in terms of learning a new skill. How did you get to own that skill? What was it?
My neighbor said by having somebody show them what to do.
Demonstration and modeling. Okay. Anybody else?
My neighbor and I both said by actually doing it.
Okay. So, you know, this isn't rocket science. The lecture and the passive observation tend to not be nearly as powerful as seeing it done and then getting a chance to do it. And we do need to remind ourselves of this, particularly at the college level. Would you agree? Particularly, you know, as we move up the food chain, if you want to think about whatever you're going to call it, as you move up, you know, it just breaks my heart in first-grade classrooms when we've stopped actually having a kindergarten approach to learning, and all the kids are in rows doing worksheets, and why are we doing this? Well, we've got to get them ready for college, right? Well, we all learn through play, and it is false to say that after we leave preschool, after we finish kindergarten, we need to stop playing, and we need to get serious, because we make sense of confusing and new ideas and skills many times through play. And there's a great group at MIT called the Lifelong Kindergarten Group. Why do they call themselves Lifelong Kindergarten? This is MIT, for goodness sake. It's because we get a lot of things right in kindergarten that later, for different reasons, because our school system is designed, as the book Inevitable, I guess, points out, on a Prussian model that was supposed to just really pull a small amount of talent and pass that on, and then teach compliance to everyone else. You know, the school system itself doesn't tend to do a nice job of encouraging creativity. I saw this video today. Have you heard of Google Play? I love the juxtaposition of old technology and old school with new school. Now, this is I'll ask you this question to talk about with your neighbor. Is this playing with media as we're talking about today?
Down on your phone.
your entertainment anywhere you want it to be. Because it's all simply here.
Now, in the definition for today, when we talk about playing with media, consumption is a part of it. But that's not the main part of it. What about the creation of that video? Did those folks play with media? Yes. And that's our challenge. It's not to be simply the watchers of Khan Academy, but the creators of the Khan Academy videos. And for our students to, and for us to. So, let's just not talk about curriculum. Let's just talk personal. What are you giving for Mother's Day this year? What are you giving for Father's Day? What are you giving for the next birthday in your family? I challenge you to give the gift of human voices. In 2008, I'm going to play just about a 40-second clip of the Mother's Day present that my kids recorded for my mom with a tool called VoiceThread. What's the value of this to our family?
Happy Mother's Day, Anna. This is just something so you remember what's happened in our lives and the great times we've had together.
My memories of Thanksgiving always are at your house, gathered around your big dining room table with Chewy and Max and everyone having a big dinner.
This is me playing in my swimming pool with my numbers, and I like swimming a lot, and I can't wait to swim this summer.
Now, this is actually shared privately. You can't go online and see this particular video. And I may get some flack from my mom if she listens to this recording and realizes I had her picture on the screen. What do you think? Do you think anybody in your family would be interested in hearing your voice? Talk about memories that you have growing up, having children or grandchildren in your family? We need to play with media, folks, and it's not just in front of the kids. It's a fallacy to think we'll come here to this professional development workshop, we'll hear some great ideas and see some wonderful, you know, ways of using media, and then next week, we're in with the kids using the tools. No. We're going to need to play with this. We're going to need to use it. We're going to need to personally appropriate these skills and get a little more comfortable before we step in front of the kids. So, hands-on learning sticks. Turn to your neighbor and briefly share a project that you remember from your school experience. Something that you did, something that you made. Remember back and share. Okay? Okay, 30 seconds. Go. What grade did you
have? Probably fifth grade and sixth grade. I remember I did dinosaurs one year, and I did the moon another year.
Okay.
And I do remember a lot of details about it.
Really? Isn't that interesting? You know, we talk about big things and big themes we need to remember, but sometimes it can be real small details. And why do we remember that detail? Well, a lot of times it's because we created something. We had to perform. We had to show. We had to talk. We had to teach. You know? We had to share with others. Thank you. Learners need to make stuff. Some of us teach classes that are more naturally oriented to this. We teach art, all right? We teach, you know, we teach football. We're a coach, you know, it's performance-based. We teach theater. What about math? Can we make math have a performance element? Can we encourage students to need to connect it to the real world to make it relevant? but then to build something that's going to have that same kind of impact. We've started a STEM program in Yukon Public Schools, where I'm working this semester 4 days a week on contract as an instructional coach. And the first project that our fourth and fifth graders did involved prosthetics. And we had some veterans who had prosthetics come in and talk to the kids. And basically, they didn't know whether to be freaked out or think it was really cool, you know, when they took off their prosthetic legs. And after this experience, the kids have designed their own prosthetic legs, and they had a race at the end. But there's this whole process, and it's engineering. It's engineering with fourth and fifth graders. And one of the speakers who had had a prosthetic leg for 20 years, she was involved in a terrorist attack where a bomb went off, but she was in the military and lost her leg. And she, I don't know how many legs she had, almost like 10 different versions. She had, one of you, I can just tell, are going to invent my neck, you know, one of my legs that I'm going to have, because this stuff keeps on getting better. We can't always make something in class. And it's messy, by the way, as we make stuff, isn't it? What's easier, to lecture via PowerPoint, Keynote, or the overhead? You choose, okay? Or to help facilitate a project where kids are making things. It's a lot messier to facilitate. But the thing that makes the biggest impact is when the kids are active, when they're hands-on. They're making something. They're teaching. And so that's one of the challenges for us, is to think about ways kids can do that. And media can be a powerful amplifier. We're not wanting to use technology just, oh, we got to use technology. We're wanting to use it in ways that are powerful, that impact students, and help the learning really stick. Passive learning is easy to forget. Can you think back to your school career? Think back to a professor, or think back to a teacher, where it's kind of challenging to remember one of those nuggets. You know, what do I remember from Mr. Sons? Don't be that teacher. Don't be that person that provides a passive experience for your kids that's easily forgettable. Be a teacher that encourages kids to have learning experiences that stick. Let's talk about Windows. How many of you have a website of some kind? Okay. It's gotten a lot easier to make websites. Did anybody have to take a front page class at some point? Or were you all thankfully spared from that experience? Or Dreamweaver, Claire's homepage? I mean, like, you know, let's go back.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, we had to have software. It was this thing you downloaded into this thing called your hard drive. And you had to make things and then upload them, and then things were, you know, available for others. Think of your website as a window into your classroom. Yes, we can share homework with kids. Great. That's a great step, you know. Yes, we can broadcast. But we can also interactively share work. And the breakout session that I'll share today in sessions 2 and 3 is about showcasing student work. We need to showcase learning much more in our schools, I think, than we do today. Do sports get any publicity around here? They do in Oklahoma, okay? We get a lot of publicity. I'm not saying we don't publicize sports. Sports are really important. But learning in the classroom is really important, too. And we have opportunities to tell our story and to really... Here's a stage, right? To let our students be on the stage. And if the website you have now provides kind of a fuzzy experience to peer into your class, I want you to think about clearing that. How can I provide a better picture for my parents, a better picture for students into what we do? What kind of learning are we doing? I'm not saying install a webcam and have people, you know, be able to... it's not a vet. Where do you take dogs to when you go out of town? A kennel called Bow Wow in Oklahoma. And do you all have those? Yeah, Bow Wow. My in-laws are on their 50th wedding anniversary cruise in Australia right now. And guess where Coco, the mongrel, is? He's at Camp Bow Wow. In fact, if I thought about this earlier, we probably could have pulled up the webcam, and if he was at playtime, we could see him. They do this on their iPad, on their trip, right? There's Coco. Look, he's doing good. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that's what we need to do, okay? So relax. But I am saying that when our kids
are engaged in powerful learning, when they have aha moments, when they create stuff, we have opportunities to amplify that with technology. It could be as simple as a picture of a piece of art that they create, or it could be something more sophisticated like a video. Assessments should be windows into what we know and what we can do. Easiest stuff to assess? Knowledge and comprehension level learning. That's what bubble sheets do, right? Bubble sheets don't tend to assess higher order thinking really well. So as we think about assessment, whatever you teach, whatever grade level, think about the ways that media could perhaps provide a better window into what your students know, into what they can do, and their understanding, their gaps. Darren Kropotwah is a math teacher in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and he is, I think, famous, should be world famous, for his Scribe blog. He's had his kids write summaries of the day's learning and then share those online. In more than one instance, he says, kids have come up and said, Mr. K, I don't feel like I can write this. Because he's teaching pre-calculus and calculus. Well, why don't you feel like you can write that summary? Well, I'm not sure I get it. Well, go ahead and give it a try. Let's see. Because what happens is that child writes the summary. They identify their gaps. The teacher identifies their gaps. They have conversations. They talk about it. And through that process, they grow. It can take a lot of risk to show you where my gap is. They're teaching me how to do derivatives. I don't remember how to do those today. And my son, by the way, asked me last year in seventh grade, Dad, can you help me with least common multiple? What? Do I remember how to do that? Oh, but I heard about Khan Academy. Let's go look and do this. And, you know, it was helpful. It was a different way to do it. But we needed to disclose. He needed to be saying, Dad, I don't get this, and have a conversation. So, short little video here. Kern Kelly. Where's Kern? Alice, what? He's in Newport, Maine. And in September, I had a chance to ask him about digital portfolios. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't say for sure what the learning environment looks like in 5 years or 10 years. But I can say that helping students build a portfolio of work is an important piece of the puzzle. And so Kern had some good things to say about that in September.
Hi, this is Paul Squire in Lewiston, Maine, with the amazing Kern Kelly. I could ask Kern questions all night long, but I'm not going to. You were telling me a little bit about how your students are using iPod Touches to do their digital portfolio documentation, and how's that working?
It's working well. One of the things that we really emphasize in our district is having students being in charge of digitizing their own work, taking ownership of it. One thing that typically happens is teachers do a lot of the work, especially when it starts with digital stuff. They're trying to collect it, and they're laying around kind of, you know, being the secretaries for the students. And we're working our way to do as much as little as possible as far as getting to the point where students are in charge of their own work. They're handing it in digitally. That's how they're digitizing it. With the iPod Touches specifically, students will use the camera built into it, basically a classroom camera, one iPod Touch the entire room, and they'll hand it around, take pictures of their non-digital work, let's say it's our work, let's say it's math, send it to themselves. iPods have the ability to email photos right directly from the iPod, and we use Picasa Web Albums, which can receive an image right directly to a single email address that's unique for each student. With that, the kids can put it right directly into their digital portfolios. The teacher basically just checks it, but they're not doing any of the legwork. They're not doing any of the work behind it.
Awesome. Now, have you dabbled with audio doing that or video? And tell people maybe a little bit about where they're building the portfolios, because you guys have been working with Google Sites for a couple years.
Yeah, we use Google Sites for our digital portfolios. Exactly. And audio is the same thing. We started audio a couple years ago before we had the iPod Touch with the camera built into them. With audio, we actually, because we are 7th and 8th grade, students all have one-to-one laptops, and last year or 2 years ago, we started where our chorus kids would record themselves using GarageBand and then upload their recordings into their own web portfolio using Google Sites to basically put it on their own website that the teacher could just go around and click on and play. The first time we did this, I asked the kids, you know, what did you think? Was it harder? Was it easier for you? And the student that I talked to, a cute little young girl, very precocious, was like, yeah, Mr. Kelly, this was okay, but it was a lot easier when Mr. Lancaster did all the work for us. Which, of course, makes sense, right? And the kids, you know, they can actually do the legwork of it. Which, of course, that's what we want. We want them to kind of know how to do it and kind of digitize their own work, so as they take it forward, they're building their portfolio as they go.
Awesome. So are they able to upload the MP3 just right into Google Site? And does it give a player? Or how does that work when they put that on their page?
Yes, exactly that. They upload it as an attachment. And there's a Google Gadget, which is a Google Audio Player that's built right into it. So all the teacher does, the next step, if you want to get this far, is they go to the teacher's website that has a Google Form built into it. And they copy and paste the link to that address. So the teacher from there just sees a list, a spreadsheet with all the different links on it. They just click each student's name. It pulls up. And at that point, they can click play and listen to the audio piece. This does two things. One, it digitizes the work, obviously. The kids are digitizing themselves. They have their ownership of that. They own that. It also does where, as they go forward, let's say the high school chorus teacher can now listen back to what they were like in 8th grade and 7th grade and so forth. So they want to hear how much progress they've made over the years. It's already done. It's built right into it for them.
Awesome. Okay. That video and all these slides, by the way, are located on our site for this conference. So just like handouts and resources, you can access those links. Would you agree that's a... those are some powerful ideas. It's huge. Just that idea of shifting the responsibility. It's not my responsibility to build this portfolio for you as a student, as a teacher. I'm going to facilitate, the kinds of things that I want you to do. We have rubrics, we have expectations, but ultimately you are building this. And by the way, kids don't have to start in first grade publishing their work under their name, right? It actually is an interesting thing. Rachel has written an ebook now with a second grade classmate that's on Amazon. And you can go to Amazon.com and it brings up these interesting digital footprint ideas that I'm making for her as the parent. But kids don't have to publish under their name at any point, right? They can use an alias. They can publish under a different name. Then they can go claim that whenever they want. When they and their parent decide, all right, it's time for a digital portfolio. There's content out there, I need to take charge of that, we can claim it. Let's talk a little bit about standards. This is perhaps the most boring part of this whole presentation, but it's important. We in Oklahoma are a Common Core state. We're one of, 39? Maine is as well, I think, adopting Common Core standards. There's a whole bunch of this I don't agree with. I'm not going to talk about that today as far as the assessment piece, and our teachers are going to be assessed next year 50% on the tests of their kids. And, oh gosh, in Florida, did we know that... 70% of the teachers teach a content area or grade level that doesn't have a test. I said I wasn't going to go into that, so I'm sorry. Put that aside. But let's talk about some of the good stuff in Common Core. What does it mean? It means we are all literacy teachers. We're all writing teachers. You teach math? Great. Your kids need to be writing about math. How do you, figure out that proof? How do you solve that problem? Evidence-based writing. What is the support for that? For that claim. Oral communication skills. I saw this and realized we've all got to become debaters. This is what we do in competitive debate and speech, is we, with extemporaneous speaking and debate, is we support with evidence and we learn to hopefully communicate clearly. And critical thinking skills. Okay? It's for everyone. Everyone needs to do it. How do we develop those? Well, the national technology standards for students have a strong emphasis on media. And on things like the creation of digital products, collaboration, problem solving, these things are in different kinds of standards. So there is strong support for this, not only in research and in our own experiences as learners playing with media, but the standards have these ideas as well. What's the link to your portfolio? Have any of us had an experience with a student who went to college and didn't get into a sorority, fraternity, club because of a Google search? Has that happened to anybody? When I was in Alva, Oklahoma, which is just east of the Panhandle, 2 years ago, the counselor told me a story about one of their graduates who was going to Oklahoma State. Maybe I told this story last time I was here. And, applying to a sorority. And every sorority today does what? Online, when you apply. They look you up. They look you up on Facebook. They look you up on Google. And some of the things they found, led them to tell the student directly, we don't think you're a fit for our sorority. Now, was technology to, blame in that case? Probably not. And I don't know exactly what the photos were and what was disclosed. But how do you take charge of that? All of us, I think, need to have a professional digital footprint. And there's an aha here that many people haven't had. You mean you can Google me? I took notes about a year ago at a Wednesday night presentation at our church by a former school counselor who was talking about emotional intelligence. It was a really good presentation. And
like I do a lot of times, I posted my notes. Well, she called me about a month later. She said, Wes, I'm on Google. So what do you mean? She says, your notes of my presentation, they're on Google. And that's not everything I said. I said, I know those were my notes. Can I link to a website? Can I get something, can I add something to that? And she just had not understood this, that when somebody puts something online about you, that is something that can be pulled up. And so, you know, she needs a website. She's a counselor. She's a professional. And if you Google her name, her website should come up first. How do you do this? You have to publish work. You have to claim it. And I think we in education will do a powerful and positive service to our students if we help them build their digital portfolio as they go through school. It doesn't mean that everything they do is out there right now for somebody to click on and go to, but they need to be able to claim that work. And as they archive work and they have work that they're proud of, they can put that in their formal portfolio. Let's talk about brains. Our brains are wired for images. And I could have put a bunch of text up here. Did you want to make a comment?
I just had a question about what is the ethical or legal responsibility of you, I give a presentation, I say many things, you put your notes about, which is your interpretation of my presentation.
That's right.
So where, to me it seems like a gray area of you taking what I present, creating notes, putting that out there on the web, and I can't go back and say, well, wait a second. You know, I said everyone should have.
Right. I think it brings up responsibilities for publishing. See, this is what Shirky says. We're all publishers now. Do you know anyone in retirement, by the way, whose actual job now is to forward jokes? You know? We all kind of know people like that, right? They're publishers. They're sharing. Now, they're using email. But it's just another step. Alice is going to do a session on Postgres today. And what's it called? It's just called Digital Show and Tell.
Yes.
But I mean, you can now, with email, be posting on a blog, and it can be visible for everyone. And there are important responsibilities that come with being a publisher. You know, and I try to take that seriously. I think we've got to talk with students about that. Only had one case since I've been blogging since 2003 where somebody at a national conference said, take that down. That's copyright material, and it's wrong. I will file suit against you if you don't. This is a national speaker who's all over the world. Okay, I'll take that down. There's a lot of value in having folks reflect back to us what they heard and what they understood. I hope more of us will take notes and share. Usually for professional development, how do we get credit? We were there, you know, we warmed the seat, got the certificate, and so asking folks to write reflections and do that, I think, should become more of our professional development. But there are a lot of issues there, and integrity issues about representing them. And one of the things that I want to do is I want to amplify good ideas. You know, I want to share the link. I want to empower folks to get more information. You want to know about emotional intelligence? Great. Go to my blog, put in emotional intelligence. You'll find that post, and, you know, but the whole learning process can be so powerful when our minds get connected. But it brings up a ton of issues. And right, if somebody comes to me and says, take that down, I'm going to sue you. Oh, gosh, I will. But I've been blogging since 2003, and that's only happened once. And I had a lot of conversations with people after the fact about the ideas of their presentation. And I've learned so much more, you know, following it because of comments people have made and other links and stuff. Good question. So, how many of us are familiar with the Taliban's view on women and education? So I could have put text up here, but I put an image from the summer of 2010 when these young ladies in Afghanistan received their EXO laptops, which are tools that they're not only able to use at school, but they're able to take home, which have over 60 free applications, which immediately connect to other devices, allowing them to write together, collaborate together. I see this picture and wonder if they're all still alive, because I've heard about car bombs and all kinds of tragedy, and, you know, I think about a lot of things. Nobody tells you, your eye, where to go on this picture. If it's text, we do, right? Do anybody speak a primary language other than English in this room? What primary language is what? Your first language?
Italian.
Italian?
Italian.
Okay. So Latin-based languages, we're still starting upper left corner, moving left to right, top to bottom. Okay? And if we were speaking Mandarin, or reading Mandarin, we would still start at the top, but we would go right to left. I mean, there's a place we start when we read text. But when we read an image, we don't. And we don't know, I don't know, somebody does, the number of neurons, but it's in the hundreds that connect your ear to your brain, but it's in the thousands when it connects your eye to your brain. Visual images are powerful. So guess what we need to do? Stop abusing this tool called PowerPoint. If I want to talk about the importance of relationships at school, let me show you my son's third grade teacher. Because this image is potentially going to speak volumes more than just text I can put on the screen. And by the way, I shouldn't insult you in general by reading text to you from the screen. You can read silently much more quickly than I can read aloud. So, another book recommendation, Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds. No, he's not trying to get us all to be Buddhists. He's trying to end PowerPoint abuse. I worked for AT&T for 2 years as an education advocate. I use PowerPoint like nobody's business every day. How do they do it? Well, they use PowerPoint the way Bill Gates' folks designed it, with these templates that have a lot of text on them. And that's not a real effective way to use a visual presentation tool. And that's what Presentation Zen is about. My favorite spot to get images now for presentations like today is the Flickr Creative Commons site. Creative Commons is a license that we can put on our work that gives permission up front for other people to use it. Don't have to ask me about quoting on my blog, you can if you want, but I've already given you permission because I've used this Creative Commons license. And currently there's over 31 million photos in this category alone. You can find a lot more image resources if you go to the website playingwithmedia.com or simply Google Playing With Media and click Images. I've got a lot more resources just like that on the site. Let's talk about stories. This is my son, now in 8th grade, Alexander. And for the past, 4 years, we've had a blog for our family. And he wrote a poem for his 8th grade English class to start the year called The Fire. And I asked him, as I often do for my kids when they have some work, here, can you put that on the blog? And he'd already typed it, so it was pretty easy. He just copied and pasted it, put it on the blog. I won't read the whole thing, but last summer was a pretty bad year for fires in the Midwest. Terrible in Texas. It was really bad in New Mexico. Our favorite place, Jemez Springs, just north of Albuquerque, closed, I think, for most of the summer. And it was bad in Oklahoma, too. We had friends that lived just on the east side of I-35 that had to evacuate. And the state had to pay like $5,000 a day for a Chinook helicopter that was dropping water on these fires that were around. But this was a pretty powerful poem. So I didn't even realize it until about 3 weeks later that he'd received some comments, because he is an administrator on our blog, and he can approve comments. And so Joyce McGreevy writes this comment: "What a powerful narrative poem, Alexander. Marvelous use of figurative language and suspense-building repetition. Thank you for sharing it with us. Keep writing. You have a gift." And she's an author for Sierra Club Books and an editor for National Geographic? What? And you might be sitting there going, okay, Wes, yeah, but you have a few Twitter followers. That's how that happened. But no, there's another reason this happened. By the way, who's this? My mom? Okay? My mom doesn't usually get to write or to read his assignments that he turns in. How much did it cost to do this? It was free. What's the value and impact, not only to him, but to our family? It's big. This is how it happened. It's a project called Comments for Kids that started in 2010. And it started on a wiki, and now it's moved to Twitter. Lots of you, I'm sure, are in the boat of going, you know what, I don't need to know what somebody had for breakfast. Okay. I don't even know that. And yes, there are some people who share what they had for breakfast for Twitter. And I'll admit, sometimes I take pictures of my food, and sometimes I share that. Not that often. But this is a big reason to be on Twitter, okay? You don't even have to use your name. Set up an account for your classroom. And when you post a tweet that can contain no more than 140 characters, you put a link to your student's work, and you put this hashtag, #comments4kids, there are folks all over the planet who follow that and leave comments for kids because teachers have asked other people to do it. And as I've taught pre-service teachers for the last three semesters at North Texas and University of Central Oklahoma, this is how I've encouraged my kids to connect to teachers who are using blogs and to connect to real kids and to talk about what an edifying comment looks like and how do we write that. I'm the executive director of Story Chasers, a nonprofit in Oklahoma. There's an interesting story around that logo. I like that logo a lot. We outsourced it on a tool called Creative Spring, posted it, and there's a guy, I think he's in Slovenia, who was the one who created like 147 different proposals came in. We chose the logo. That's the one we like. This semester, we're piloting a student story chasing club in Yukon Public Schools. You all don't call them Story Chasers, but you already have them. Going, right? Clipper TV. How much are the kids getting paid for that? Are they getting grades for that? Oh, they're doing that because they want to do that?
Yeah.
Because they're excited about media production and journalism? What's the potential here to amplify great things happening at your school? It's huge. And it's exciting. Telling stories. Let's talk about engagement. Love this quotation. Alan Kay worked at Xerox PARC where they invented something called the mouse and the graphical user interface. And he talks about the predominant learning tool. Thankfully here, it's not just the pencil, right? It's the laptop. And that should change predominant learning tasks. It's incredible to see the proliferation of mobile computer devices. In the last 3 weeks, I've read several articles talking about how mobile tablets are going to exceed not only the sales, but the number of items, the number of desktop and laptop computers by 2014. And underlying that is the prediction that the iPad alone is going to double in sales in 2012 and double again in 2013. Oh my gosh. What do we call that kind of growth? Exponential growth, living in the elbow of exponential change. So, one of the things this means for us is that the menu for demonstrating mastery and understanding has exploded because the pencil no longer predominates. There are other devices and tools that we can use. And this particular framework, the revision of Bloom's taxonomy that Anderson and Crosswall edited in 2001, means a lot of things. We used to say, we changed them all to verbs, and my dissertation committee chair said, no, they're actually gerunds. I said, you taught English, didn't you? Okay, so gerunds, verbs, these are action, right? Create, evaluate, analyze, apply, understand, describe, explain, remember. We need to operate more at this level for assessment and think about how we're challenging our kids to deeply engage with ideas. That's Common Core, by the way, as well. Reason number 9, it's fun. Sarah should have read The Hobbit as one of her 5 books for 6th grade last summer. She didn't. Could have just read Spark Notes. But that probably wouldn't have stuck too well. So, bless you. We created a little video one afternoon before school started called The Hobbit in 5 Minutes. And I will not subject you to the entire thing. I will say that in getting this together, I found that Peter Jackson has been putting videos since last fall about The Hobbit, which comes out in December online. That'd be a much more engaging thing, perhaps. But watch this and think about what had to go into it. A little backstory, we used a free app on the iPad for teleprompter. Had to write a script, okay? Didn't have Lego minifigures for all the characters, so we used some Webkinz and some finger puppets. Recorded it with an iPad, okay? I'll just share 45 seconds of this.
The Hobbit is the story of Bilbo Baggins, who lived a peaceful life in Hobbiton, in his hobbit hole at Bag End, until he decided to embark on a great adventure. One day, Gandalf, the wizard, came to visit Bilbo and brought a band of gold-loving dwarves to his home. Gandalf convinced the dwarves, led by Thorin Oakenshield, to hire Bilbo. The past ended when an army of goblins arrived on the scene and started the Battle of the 5 Armies. This involved goblins, elves, men, and dwarves, and the eagle finally arrived with
have to do a media project like that in class, right? They can do that as an assignment. The menu has expanded. We need to give students more choices. Just as we're at the restaurant, there's not only one thing on the menu, there needs to be more options on the menu. And perhaps no one has said it better than Yarmouth Prophet Ben, who on March 15 posted this on his blog. It gets the students innovating more. It gives them ownership over the product they produce. We assess on mastery learning objectives. See, it's not about, let's do an iMovie. It's about, we're learning how to multiply integers. We're learning how to interpret literature and think about Romeo and Juliet and how Shakespeare, you know, used suspense or whatever kind of technique in his writing to convey in a really compelling way. So last reason is we need to archive history, and I'll close with this story. This is my dad and Rachel. In December of this year, we had a chance to go up to Kansas, and my parents have lived in the same home now since 1981, and they've torn down their garage, and they built a little shed where the snowblower and the mower, and I don't know how it happened that there was this box that throughout time, since 1949, had really not been opened, but around Thanksgiving, Dad discovered this box which had a Cub Scout scrapbook that he had made in 1949 and 1950. And so in that book is a photo of Dad's class, I think in third grade, and lots of great stories surrounding this, but his report cards were in here too. All right, and this is third grade. Teacher's comments first 6 weeks. Tommy does good schoolwork. Nothing for the second 6 weeks. But in the third, we say, Tommy has been a little careless about forming some of his letters in his written work. I think he gets in a hurry. Nothing in the fourth 6 weeks. We've got some numbers over here indicating, you know, some proficiency and competency. Days present, days absent. You know, fifth 6 weeks, Tommy has been more careful about his work recently. Good. Six weeks. I hope Tommy has a pleasant vacation and a successful year in the fourth grade. Signatures of my grandparents. Now, certainly with PowerSchool, we've come quite a ways from this kind of report card. But there are so many ways today media can provide a better window into what students know and what they understand, what they can do. And it can really be a tool for them to use as they move forward in their academic career. I don't think we can underestimate the importance of helping our children and our students discover their voice and the power of words. The power of words. Alice was telling me yesterday about Martha, who greets children by name, as I'm sure many of you do. Am I saying that right? It's Martha, the assistant. How important is that? How important is it to greet children by name? To recognize them? For it to matter whether they come or not. It's huge. So the words we speak, the things we write, they make a difference. And we can use media to make that difference. So, last book recommendation, What Technology Wants by Kevin Kelly. Really interesting guy. He's the editor for Wired Magazine. He's a Luddite. He was a hippie. Probably still is. Interesting life. Interesting book. Best quotation, technology is not tremendous unless it's capable of tremendous abuse. But there's the other side of that coin. This technology can be used in horrible ways, horrific ways. But it can be used in incredibly powerful and constructive ways. And it's about choices. It's about helping all of us learn to make good choices. So my challenge for you this year is that you will take the Playing with Media Classroom Challenge. Not only playing with media personally, when you think about Mother's Day gift, Father's Day gift, birthday gift. But let's take it to the student level. And share a digital text project, a project where students use images, maybe a five-photo story project, five photos, I want you to communicate this idea, with audio, with video, with a collaborative project. We are going to exciting places together. You are on the cutting edge of this journey of discovery that we're in with digital learning. And it helps to share what we do. I've set up this website, share.playingwithmedia.com, where you'll just find examples of student work from around the world that utilize these different kinds of technologies that are talked about in the book. And last week, I actually set up this one for ebooks, just to showcase ebooks that are being created with apps like Book Creator for the iPad. It's amazing how we can now create a book and be able to share that, recording our voice, making it enhanced, taking pictures. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Have a great day.
Thank you, Judy, for your inspiring and creative introduction to our day. And Wes, thank you for inspiring us and challenging us to go forth and create and play with media and to share with one another and our students and the world. Before we go forth and continue our learning, we do have some nuts and bolts to share with you. Have a wonderful day.
Use our conference site to access digital handouts from sessions. If you're sharing, remember to update your session page.
Student helpers are available. Just call the help desk at extension 209.
Spare laptop batteries will not be available during the day.
Bring your laptop charger in case you run out of juice during the day. Offer to buddy breathe with a neighbor if needed.
Vote with your feet during sessions. A session doesn't meet your needs, get up and go to another one.
Share your learning points and links during the day on Twitter using the hashtag #PlayingWithMedia.
Take photos during the day and share them with email using the email address on our conference site. Click Photos on the conference site to view it.
A map of rooms is available on the conference site. Click YHS floor plan to view it.
Lunch is provided today in the YHS cafeteria from 11:50 to 12:30.
Try at least one new thing today. Remember, the magic happens when we move outside our comfort zones.
We know March Madness games are streaming live online. It's not the day to watch TV at school.
Thanks to all our presenters, facilitators today for sharing their great ideas.
There will be an opportunity to share your learning SmackDown style in the YPath at the end of the day.
Above all, have fun learning and playing with media today.
Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.